Thank you. Mother started to separate everyone into angels and shepherds and guests at the inn, but right away she ran into trouble. Who were the shepherds? Leroy Herdman wanted to know. Where did they come from? Ollie Herdman didn't even know what a shepherd was, or anyway, that's what he said. What was the inn? Claude asked. What's an inn? What happened first? Imogen hollered at my mother. Begin at the beginning. Mother said she had better begin by reading the Christmas story from the Bible. This was a pain in the neck to most of us because we knew the whole thing backward and forward and never had to be told anything except who we were supposed to be and where we were supposed to stand. What was that they laid the baby in? Leroy said. That manger. Is that like a bed? Why would they have a bed in the barn? That's just the point, Mother said. They didn't have a bed in the barn, so Mary and Joseph had to use whatever there was. What would you do if you had a new baby and no bed to put the baby in? We put Gladys in a bureau drawer, Imogen volunteered. Well, there you are, Mother said, blinking a little. You didn't have a bed for Gladys, so you had to use something else. Oh, we had a bed, Ralph said. Only Ollie was still in it, and he wouldn't get out. He didn't like Gladys. He elbowed Ollie. Remember how you didn't like Gladys? I thought that was pretty smart of Ollie not to like Gladys right off the bat. Anyway, Mother said, Mary and Joseph used the manger. A manger is a large wooden feeding trough for animals. What were the wadded-up clothes? Claude wanted to know. The what? Mother said. You read about it. She wrapped him in wadded-up clothes. Swaddling clothes, Mother sighed. Long ago, people used to wrap their babies very tightly in big pieces of material so they couldn't move around. It made the babies feel cozy and comfortable. I thought it probably just made the babies mad. Till then, I didn't know what swaddling clothes were either, and they sounded terrible, so I wasn't too surprised when Imogen got all excited about that. You mean they tied him up and put him in a feed box, she said? Where was the child welfare?
The child welfare was always checking up on the Herdmans. I'll bet if the child welfare had ever found Gladys all tied up in a bureau drawer, they would have done something about it.
When we got home, my father wanted to hear all about it. Well, Mother said, just suppose you had never heard the Christmas story and didn't know anything about it, and then somebody told it to you. What would you think? My father looked at her for a minute and then he said,
Well, I guess I would find it pretty disgraceful that they couldn't find any room for a pregnant woman except in the stable.
Exactly, Mother said. It was perfectly disgraceful, and I never thought about it much. You hear all about the nice warm stable with all the animals breathing and the sweet-smelling hay, but that doesn't change the fact that they put Mary in a barn. We sang two verses of O Little Town of Bethlehem while Mary and Joseph came in from a side door. Only they didn't come right away. So we hummed and hummed and hummed, which is boring and also very hard. And before long doesn't sound like any song at all, more like an old refrigerator. I guess we could have gone on humming till we all turned blue, but we didn't have to. Ralph and Imogen were there all right, only for once they didn't come through the door pushing each other out of the way. They just stood there for a minute as if they weren't sure if they were in the right place, because of the candles, I guess, and the church being full of people. They looked like the people you see on the 6 o'clock news. Refugees, sent to wait in some strange, ugly place with all their boxes and sacks around them. It suddenly occurred to me that this was just the way it must have been for the real Holy Family, stuck away in a barn by people who didn't much care what happened to them. They couldn't have been very neat and tidy either, but more like this Mary and Joseph. Imogen's veil was cockeyed as usual, and Ralph's hair stuck out all the way around his ears. Imogen had the baby doll, but she wasn't carrying it the way she was supposed to, cradled in her arms. She had it slung up over her shoulder, and before she put it in the manger, she thumped it twice on the back. I heard Alice gasp, and she poked me. I don't think that's very nice to burp the baby Jesus, she whispered, as if he had colic. Then she poked me again. Do you suppose he could have had colic? I said, I don't see why not, and I didn't. He could have had colic. Or been fussy or hungry like any other baby. After all, that was the whole point of Jesus, that he didn't come down on a cloud like something out of Amazing Comics, but that he was born and lived, a real person.
Thank you. Every December, a letter in strange spidery writing and bearing a stamp from the North Pole would arrive for J.R.R. Tolkien's children. The letters were from Father Christmas.
Christmas 1930. I have enjoyed all your letters. I hope you will like your stockings this year. I tried to find what you asked for, but the stores have been in rather a muddle. You see, the polar bear has been ill. He had whooping cough, first of all. I could not let him help with the packing and sorting which begins in November, because it would be simply awful if any of my children caught polar whooping cough and barked like bears on Boxing Day. So I had to do everything myself in the preparations. Of course, Polar Bear has done his best. He cleaned up and mended my sleigh and looked after the reindeer while I was busy. That is how the really bad accident happened. Early this month we had a really bad snowstorm, nearly 6 feet of snow, followed by an awful fog. The poor polar bear went out to the reindeer stable and got lost and nearly buried. I did not miss him or go to look for him for a long while. His chest had not got well from whooping cough, so this made him frightfully ill, and he was in bed until 3 days ago. Everything has gone wrong, and there's been no one to look after my messengers properly. Aren't you glad the polar bear is better? We had a party on Saturday, as soon as he felt well enough, of polar cubs and snow boys, sons of the snowmen, which are the only sort of people that live near. Not, of course, men made of snow, though my gardener, who is the oldest of all the snowmen, sometimes draws a picture of a made snowman instead of writing his name. Polar Bear didn't eat much, but when the big cracker went off after, he threw away his rug and leapt in the air and has been well ever since. While he had the cough and cold, he once sneezed so terribly that he blew 5 candles out. Still, he is all right now. I know, because he's been at his tricks again, quarrelling with the snowman, my gardener, and pushing him through the roof of his snow house, and packing lumps of ice instead of presents in naughty children's parcels. That might be a good idea, only he never told me, and some of them, with ice, were put in warm storerooms and melted all over good children's presents. Well, my dears, there's lots more I should like to say about my green brother and my father, old grandfather Yule, and why we were both called Nicholas after the saint whose day is December the 6th, who used to give secret presents, sometimes throwing purses of money through the window. But I must hurry away. I'm late already, and I'm afraid that you may not get this in time. Father Christmas.
Professor Peter Shandy, who teaches at an American college, feels that his neighbours overdo their Christmas decorations. With a finesse born of much practice, Professor Shandy backed Mrs. Ames off his front step and shut the door. This was the 73rd time in 18 years she'd nagged him about decorating his house. The tradition dated back, as Professor Shandy had taken the trouble to find out, no farther than 1931, when the wife of the then president of the college had found a box of Japanese lanterns and decided to stage a grand illumination on Christmas Eve. The grand illumination had been such a smashing success that the college had repeated the event every year since. From near and far came tourists to bask in the spectacle. Pictures appeared in national magazines. However, the photographers always had to shoot one dark spot on the gala scene. This was the home of Peter Shandy. Left to himself, Peter Shandy would willingly have made some concession to the event, a balsam wreath or a spray of holly on the front door, and a fat white candle guttering in the parlour window after dark. He rather liked Christmas. But altogether too many of Shandy's Christmases had been blighted by the overwhelmingly Christmas spirit around the Crescent. On this morning of December the 21st, something snapped. On the morning of December the 22nd, two men drove up to the brick house in a large truck. The professor met them at the door. "Did you bring everything, gentlemen?" "The whole works. Boy, you folks up here sure take Christmas to heart." "We have a tradition to maintain," said Shandy. "You may as well start on the spruce trees." All morning the workmen toiled. Expressions of amazed delight appeared on the faces of neighbours and students. As the day wore on and the men kept at it, the amazement remained, but the delight faded. It was dark before the men got through. Peter Shandy walked them out to the truck. He was wearing his overcoat, hat, and galoshes, and carrying a case. "Everything in good order, gentlemen. Lights timed to flash on and off at 6-second intervals. Amplifiers turned up to full volume. Steel-cased switch boxes provided with sturdy locks. Very well, then. Let's flip on the power and be off." Precisely 48 hours later, on Christmas Eve, Professor Shandy stepped outside for a breath of air. Around him rolled the vast Atlantic. Above shone only the freighter's riding lights and a sky full of stars. The captain's dinner had been most enjoyable. Back on the Crescent, floodlights would be illuminating the 8 life-size reindeer mounted on the roof of the brick house. In its windows, 16 Santa Claus faces would be leering above 16 sets of artificial candles, each containing 3 red and 2 purple bulbs, each window outlined by a border of 36 more bulbs, alternating in green, orange, and blue. He glanced at his watch and did rapid calculations in his head. At that precise point, the 742 outsized red bulbs on the spruce trees would have flashed on for the 28,800th time. The amplifiers must by now have blared out 2,536 renditions of "I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas," "I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus," and "All I Want for Christmas is My 2 Front Teeth." They must be just now on the 17th bar of the 2,537th playing of "I Don't Care Who You Are, Fatty, Get Those Reindeer Off My Roof." Professor Shandy smiled into the darkness. "Bah humbug," he murmured, and began to count the stars.
Thank you. The snow on the ground takes me back to the days of Christmas when I were a lad. Though money was scarce, I can truthfully say they're the best times that I've ever had. The old cobbled streets were all covered with snow. They didn't seem so gloomy and grey. The Salvation Army band used to come round. That's when you'd hear me dad say, "What's Christmas without a brass band?" I'll ask you in all honesty. The sound that they make is so grand. What's Christmas without a brass band? Lamp that stood on the corner of the street is where they would all gather round. And out of the silence on a cold Christmas Eve there came a wonderful sound. We stood on our doorsteps, joined in their songs, our breath turned to mist as we sang. Far in the distance from the cathedral tower, faintly the Christmas bells rang. What's Christmas without a brass band? I ask you in all honesty. The sound that they make is so grand. What's Christmas without a brass band? What's Christmas without a brass band?